So I want to continue with Teves. You know, we started last week introducing Teves as a tragic month. We discussed the three fast days of Teves and what they mean. But now I want to elaborate more about the month itself, what it actually represents. We mentioned last week in brief that a certain month is associated with Esav. And the Zohar tells us that Teves is one of the months associated with Esav. Not only that, it's really the first month associated with Esav. It's the month which begins Esav as part of the year. Teves and Shvat, is that part of the year? And so is Tammuz and Av. That's considered Esav's part of the year. And namely, the mazel of Teves, the astrological sign of Teves, is the gedi, it's the goat. We know Esav is compared to a goat in many ways, which we'll discuss in a minute. But this is the month, really, of all the months, this is looked at as Esav's month, which makes it obviously a bad month for Jews and a tragic month, because Esav, we know, is our nemesis. He's the one who stands up against everything we stand for. And this month is Esav's month. Now, we mentioned last week how Teves is the coldest month of the year. And we know when Amalek came to attack, it says, Asher Karcha Baderech. So Karcha literally means that they happen upon you on the road. But Karcha is also a lesson of Kar, cold. And they made us cold. They made us dispassionate and cold from serving Hashem. And Amalek is Esav's, you know, greatest student. You know, Amalek is Esav's grandchild and Esav's greatest successor in terms of anti-Semitism and hating Klal Yisrael. So it says about Amalek, they cause coolness, they cause us to be cold in serving Hashem, and so too, this month is the coldest month of the year. The mazel of the month is the gedi, it's the goat. In English, I forgot if you call it, is that Aries maybe? Capricorn? Which is Aries? That's the ram, okay, fine. I don't know my Greek terms, but I know my Hebrew terms. So, Capricorn. So the mazel of Teves is the Capricorn, it's the gedi, it's the goat.
Yes. It's Capricorn.
Capricorn. Okay, good. And we know that Esav is compared to a goat in several ways. Number one, in Hebrew, one of the terms for goat is se'ir. And Esav is ish sa'ir, which literally means hairy in that pasuk. He's a hairy person. But sa'ir and se'ir are related words. Sa'ir is hairy and se'ir is goat. We know when Yaakov disguised himself to look like Esav in Parshas Toldos, Yaakov puts on gedi izim. He puts on goat skins to disguise himself like Esav. So Esav's hairy texture was actually that similar to a goat. And Yaakov was able to fool his father by wearing goat skins. So Esav really felt like a goat. That's what he felt like. The Medrash tells us that when we have the Seir Hashem and Seir HaZazel Yom Kippur, the two Seirim, so one of the goats represents Esav. He's represented by the goat. Also, we find that Esav lives on Har Seir. Har Seir. Har Seir literally, the word means that either call it goat mountain or hairy mountain, but it's one of those two. But the same term, Seir, goat. So Esav is compared to a goat in many, many ways. The Medrash compares Esav to a goat in several places, and that's the concept of Esav as a goat. In contrast, Yaakov's compared to a sheep. It says in the Pasuk, Se Pazura Yisrael. It's Pasuk in Yirmiyah. The Klal Yisrael is considered like a scattered sheep. And we know the mashal of a sheep. Sheep are usually, we talk about going as sheep to the slaughter, which is a term, you know, an unfortunate term, but it means there's a certain level of obedience, a level of tameness to a sheep. And a sheep is something which you look at, a sheep's fur is white, the wool is white, white's always a color of chesed, white's considered pure, white's considered something very, very nice. The standard color of a goat, certainly in terms of chazal, and even nowadays, is a dark color, a black or a brown. Black represents din, it represents things that are tragic. You know, nighttime is dark and black, and a goat is considered a negative sign, and a sheep is a positive sign. So Esav's compared to a goat, and Yaakov's compared to a sheep. Klal Yisrael very often is compared to Hashem Tzon. Right? We talk about Tzon. We know all the Avos were shepherds, and they used to graze Tzon, they grazed sheep. And a sheep is always considered a very, very positive sign in Yiddishkeit. The term also for a goat, so goats are called se'irim, they're also called izim. The word izim is like az. Az and az, like azus panim are related. You know, azus panim means somebody who's very audacious, chutzpahdik, you know, stands up to authority. And that's considered a negative thing. You know, sheep are obedient and submissive, and they submit to those around them. A goat is an animal which in many ways stands up to those around. It's kind of an animal that rejects authority. It's a little more rebellious than a sheep. You know, you picture the goat kind of like, you know, with its hind legs and like making its noises and with its horns, kind of like goring people. And a sheep is a very, very submissive and calm animal. So Klal Yisrael is the sheep. Yaakov is the sheep. And Esav is the goat, and that's the symbol of Teves. The symbol of Teves is the idea of a goat. It's very interesting also that we've compared the idea of hairy to goat. Se'ar is hair, Se'ir is a goat, Esav is somebody who was born as an Ish Se'ir, he's compared to the Se'ir. So what's the comparison of a hare to a goat? So goats are very hairy, we know that. I mean, goats have a lot of hair, but sheep are also, the sheep have their wool. What's that comparison? So you do find many, many times Chazal look at hair as a symbol of Avodah Zarah, as a very negative symbol. There's Midrashim that compare it that way. And you even find in Psukim, the Torah refers to Avodah Zarah as Se'irim. Lo yizbechu od la Se'irim. It says you should not offer your karbanos to Se'irim. So Se'irim literally means goats, but all the Mefarshim say it means offering it up to Shadim, to demons, to Avodah Zarah. We find the whole world of evil in Avodah Zarah is compared to goats and to hair. It's a very interesting thing. There's another pasuk in Yeshaya, it says Se'irim Yerakdusham. It talks about the demons dancing around in a certain wild area. And it calls the demons Se'irim. They're referred to as Se'irim. That's all the Mefarshim explain, that a Se'ir is compared to a demon, a demon is compared to a Se'ir. But this idea of goats is a very negative sign. Also, a Chatas Tzibor, on every single Yantif in the Musaf, we always talk about Se'ir Yizim Echad L'Chatas. So the sin offering is going to be a goat, because goat relates to sin. So you offer goats as your communal sin offering. We say it on Shabbos. On Shabbos there's not a sin offering. But every single Yantif is a sin offering. It's always Se'ir Yizim L'Chatas. You bring a goat as a sin offering. So you find so many examples where the goat or the hare is compared to something very negative or to Avodah Zarah. The idea of hare being Avodah Zarah, on one simple level at least, what I've heard explained once, is that Avodah Zarah is the concept of many powers. Hashem Echad, Emuna, is there's only one power. So the way the hare grows, every hare kind of draws out of its own little source in the skin. Every hare has its own roots. It's like a Avodah Zarah, you have plurality, you have many, many things that are looked at as powers. So hair is something that's growing, it doesn't grow out of one place and grow all about. Hair grows out individually, every hair follicle is coming from its own root, and that's like a Avodah Zarah, because it's the plurality of it, it's the many, many powers. So Yaakov and Esav is this battle, kind of like the sheep versus the goats. It's the Yaakov is somebody who is smooth, he's an Ish Chalak, he's someone who's smooth. And Esav is Esau, someone who's hairy. Yaakov's like the sheep, Esav's like the goat. But that's the symbolism we find of Esav. So ultimately, when we talk about Teves as a month of Esav, as a month of the Gedi, it tells us something a lot about Teves. It tells us that Teves is a month where we have to put up with the power of Esav, with the evil of Esav, with the resistance of Esav, the chutzpah of Esav, the anti-Semitism of Esav. All those things come along with the month of Teves. In contrast, the sheep is the symbol of Nisan. The Tue is the Mazel of Nisan. Nisan is the month where Klai Yisrael became a people. Nisan is the month where we experience Nisim. Hashem looks at Mitzrayim. Nisan is our best month. It's the month of miracles for Klai Yisrael. And that's the month which the Mazel of that month is a Tue, is a sheep, because that month represents the best of Klai Yisrael. So the month of the goat, Esau's month, Tevis, is the worst of Klai Yisrael. It's one of our worst months. And Nisan is one of our best months. And again, you have the idea of the sheep being obedient, the sheep is white, the sheep is something which we look at as very tsanua. The sheep provides clothing for us, the wool is the material of clothing, it covers us up. Whereas the goat is something which is dark, it resists the owner, resists authority, and a goat, the word is, like us, is the chutzpah, it's the opposite of tznius. It's not being modest, it's getting out there and standing up and rejecting all around you. So that's the contrast you have of Nisan versus Teves, of sheep versus goats, of Yaakov versus Esav, and that's the battle. Just to explain for just very briefly, this is not today's big topic, but to understand Esav and Yaakov, we had the parashios a few weeks ago, we have Toldos, we have Vayishlach. It's the parashios where Esav and Yaakov have to struggle with one another. And Esav and Yaakov is a huge discussion in the Torah, what they stand for. Esav, it's very strange how he got, Yitzchak wanted to give him the brachos, Yitzchak loved him, Rivka understood who he was, and there was always a lot of discussion about Yaakov and Esav. But just to understand in brief what Yaakov and Esav actually, what they stand for, they were twins. And the idea of them being twins is that they were two kind of equal and opposite kochos in the world. Hashem made these two twins, both people who were very, very powerful, influential people, both had a role in terms of forming the world. The one vision of it would have been, Yitzchak's vision, when he went to give the bracha to Esav, So many Farshim explain that he saw Esav as somebody who's going to be in charge of all the ideas of Olam Hazeh. He's going to take care of the material world. He's going to make sure that we have a functioning society with money, with food, with housing. And Yaakov would be the Rosh Yeshiva. He'd be the one who runs all the spiritual goals of the world. And they work together as a partnership. That would have been the goal. Esav would have been the chief in terms of all material success and material runnings of the world. And Yaakov would have been the chief in terms of the ruchnius, the spiritual runnings of the world. Obviously, it didn't work out because Esav had a lot of challenges he had to deal with, and he couldn't handle those challenges. And Esav became Esav of Russia. And his mother understood who he was. His father didn't quite understand that for one reason or the other. His mother understood who he was. And Esav went off to become, you know, Yaakov's biggest nemesis. And Yaakov had to take on for himself Esav's role as well. So Yaakov had to take on for Klal Yisrael to be the one to guide us both in the spirituality and the material world. So now we have to fend for ourselves both materially and spiritually. Whereas Esav, instead of helping us out, is against us. And that's who Esav is. And Esav really stands for the power of the world that stands up against Klal Yisrael and wants to destroy us. That's who Esav is. Now, nowadays, we have to identify, well, who is the Esav of our lives, of our world? I mean, we don't see a nation that calls themselves Esav. We don't have that nowadays. But Esav is certainly viewed as the father of all anti-Semitism. Esav is the father of anything which counters the goals of Klal Yisrael. Esav is the father of anything that counters Hashem's goals in this world. And the truth is, you know, we call ourselves now, we're in Gullus Edom, the Gullus which is caused by Rome. And we associate Esav with Rome. And simply historically, that's because, I think I mentioned this last time, historically that's because the Christians, when they first began, they tried to convert Jews. And some Jews fell for it, some Jews didn't. But eventually they went for the Gentiles. And the first nation which took on Christianity was the nation of Rome. The Holy Roman Empire took on Christianity and they spread it to the world. We view Rome as the descendant of Esav. So essentially Rome, then by extension the Christian world, that became Esav's extension into our world nowadays. That's what happened with Esav. So Esav, you know, we connect Rome back to Esav. Rome initially was pagan, they weren't Christian, eventually they became Christian, and the entire Western Christian world, we would at least, according to Machshava, if not based on genealogy, we'd associate that with Esav himself. That's what we would do. And that's what all Mefarshim do, and that's what Bali Machshava do, and that's how we understand the world that we're in, the world of America that we're in. We're surrounded by the Koch of Esav. And the entire Western culture, that's Esav's culture. That's how we view the world nowadays. So we're in Gullus Edom right now, the Gullus which was caused by Rome. Rome destroyed the second base of Mikdash. And to this very day, all that we suffer, we blame on Rome. We're in the Roman Gullus. We blame everything on Rome. The month of Teves is the month which we said last week stands for the beginning of all Chorban. Asara B'Teves is the first of all fast days chronologically. And all Chorban, all destruction, all tragedy stems from Teves, the Asara B'Teves. And it's very interesting that for Klal Yisrael, we said that Nisan is the symbol of Nisan, the mazel of Nisan is the sheep, which is Yaakov, and that's our Rosh Chodashim. We start counting our year in Nisan. The non-Jewish world counts their years from Teves, because New Year's, as far as I know, always falls in Teves. It could be one year every once in a while doesn't, but typically New Year's will fall in Teves, which is the non-Jewish world begins their year in Teves. We begin our year in Nisan. It's a very interesting thing. But this is not just the beginning of Al Chorban. The Goyim look at this as the beginning of their year. This is the Rosh Chodashim when it comes to the non-Jewish world out there. That's what this month is. So the Chazal tell us a fascinating statement. They say, Halacha, Esav soneis Yaakov. They say it's Halacha, Esav hates Yaakov. I don't mean it's Halacha, I mean we don't have to follow that. But they're saying it's a fact of life. Can't get out of it. Esav will hate Yaakov. Esav will do his best to somehow cut down, destroy, pull back Yaakov from doing his bidding in this world. And we have to understand, like, what is it that Esav does to us? I mean, in the times of Rome, who came into Eretz Yisrael and destroyed the Beis Hamikdash and killed all the Jews, we understand how Esav came to destroy Yaakov. When Esav said in the Chumash, I'm going to kill Yaakov, we understand we just destroy Yaakov. But, you know, for the past 2,000 years, what do we see about Esav destroying Yaakov? So certainly we're in Gullus Esav, Gullus Edom, and we've experienced a lot of tragedy and anti-Semitism over the years, and we can, in some way, blame that back on Esav. But still, I want to understand more, what is Esav's power that he has even to this very day? And there's two very important pieces. That's, I can hand out the photocopies. There's two pieces here I want to learn. We'll do one at a time, which helps us understand a lot better what Esav does to us even nowadays. So the first piece is the Beis HaLevi. Beis HaLevi was the original Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik. He was really the first of the great Soloveitchik dynasty, the Beis HaLevi. He put out the Svarim, both he put on Tshuvos, Svarim and Svarim on Chumash as well. He was known to be the greatest Gedolim in Europe in his time. So this piece here is a piece of Parshas Vayishlach, and he discusses Esav's attacks on Yaakov. So I think it's on the first page of the copies. Mine are all loose over here, but I think it's the very first page of the copies. And it begins, this is when Yaakov is coming back to Eretz Yisrael to fight Esav after leaving Lavan's house. And Yaakov davens, Hatzilin nom yad achim yad Esav. He davens to Hashem, save me from my brother, from Esav. And the Beis HaLevi focuses on the fact that Yaakov doubles the language. He says, save me from my brother, from Esav. From the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. Why both? Hashem knows who Esav is, Hashem knows his brother. He has one brother. So why does Yaakov have to say, save me from the hands of my brother and from the hands of Esav? So I'm going to skip down about 10 lines or so. It begins, V'yesh Lefarish. There's a period. It's on the right column. It says, V'yesh Lefarish. Everyone finds that in there? V'yesh Lefarish. It's practically 10 lines down. The last two words of the line. It says, V'yesh Lefarish. Hakavana de Yaakov behodo de Esav balikraso. When Yaakov knew that Esav was coming to greet him, so we know he's very scared, it says in the Chumash, Haven de lo yimali me'echa mishnei ofanim. So Yaakov understood that he's not going to be saved in one or two ways. I mean, Esav's going to come with two different attacks upon him. And Yaakov has to avoid both attacks, or else he's going to be trapped. What are his two attacks? Ode Esav yilachem yimo v'yiratzel hargo. Either Esav will fight him and try to kill him. Ode yisratze yimo v'yashuv me'apo. Or maybe Yaakov is very scared that Esav will be pleased with him and calm down from his anger. And settle with him in peace and tranquility. Yaakov is scared of that. So Yaakov is scared, number one, of the physical attack. He's going to come and kill me with his sword. But he's also scared he's going to make peace with me. And that possibly even scarier to Yaakov. Why was he so scared? So basically he continues. Yaakov is very scared of both these ways. Esav's goodness and love was evil to Yaakov. So it says another double language. It says Yaakov was very scared and very distressed. Yaakov was scared that maybe he'd be killed. And he was very distressed and maybe Esav would become friends with him. That was also scary. You know, we say, about a bee, they say, you don't want his honey or his stinger. You know, you don't want either thing from the bee. Just leave me alone. So Esav also, lomi uksa lomi dovsho. I don't want his stinger, I don't want his honey. V'zeu shebikesh, al hani shnei ofanam atzilin nom yad achim Esav. So Yaakov said, save me please from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. Sheinenu rotze bo, he didn't want Esav to be lo la'ach, be a brother, or be Esav. Whether it's coming with brotherhood, or he's coming as Esav Arasha, I don't want either. Ubikesh yatzilu v'shnei daim halalu. So he said, he davened to Hashem, please save me from both of these different hands. Also, and Yaakov's tefillos were accepted. Initially, Esav wanted to kill Yaakov, and Hashem saved him. So the Medrash talks about how Esav came to bite Yaakov. Hashem made an ace, and Yaakov's neck turned into stone. Esav couldn't bite him anymore. So I think it's the Sfas Emes says Esav first came to bite Yaakov with his teeth. When that didn't work, he decided to bite him with a kiss. You know, he wanted to bite him with the kiss. You know, he was trying to kiss him to make friends, but he really wanted to also cut down Yaakov in that manner. And we'll describe more what that means. But if you can't bite with your teeth, you bite with a kiss instead. But once they made up, Esav wanted to live together with Yaakov. He said, let's travel together, and I'll walk with you. Esav said, let's go together. We're brothers now. Everything's fine. We've made up. Everything's calm. Let's live together in peace, in harmony. And we can be together. Yaakov pushed him off and said, no, it's okay, don't worry. He said, my kids are very young, and they're going to walk slowly. You go ahead, I'll meet you later. That's what Yaakov tells Esav. So he's also saved from him in this way. The pasuk says, that Esav went back on his way to Seir, where he lived, and Yaakov never actually followed along. Vishmianu akasuv de beoso yom atzma, that very day, nifra Esav, menu Esav, separated from him, v'holach ladarko, and went on his way. V'nisa'akev fil yom echad imo, he didn't even stay one day with him. V'kibar kashasu, as he requested. For isi mefarshim iskashu al divrei hakasuv, v'yashav Esav b'yom ahu. Many farshim wonder, why does the Torah record that Esav went back on his way? Like, what's the big deal about that? What's the big deal that Esav went back on that very day? Did not understand the nace which occurred over there. Esav was trying to attack Yaakov by saying, let's settle together and be friends. And the very fact that Esav parted ways on the same day he came, that itself was a nace. And Torah is recording that nace as well. So he's going to explain a lot more about this. We'll explain it in short, and then he'll explain more. Now, Esav sometimes comes to us to kill us. But sometimes, even more devious, Esav comes to try to assimilate us. So say, come, we'll be friends. Our kids can play in the same schools together. We can spend time together. You know, you could still do what you want, Yaakov. You could still be a Jew. I'll do who I am. But we'll be friends. And we'll spend time together. And we'll be sure that everything is in peace around us. We'll be good neighbors. But that at times, Esav's coming to do that. Esav's coming to do that in a malicious way. He's trying to bring Yaakov away from Yiddishkeit. So Esav giving Yaakov a kiss and trying to come close to Yaakov in brotherhood, that's dangerous, even more dangerous than him killing Yaakov. When he kills Yaakov, Yaakov still is a Jew. If he becomes Yaakov's friend, he can pull Yaakov away from Yiddishkeit. And that's even scarier in many ways. So Bais Levi explains even more. We know the concept, the famous concept, that all the actions of the fathers, of the Avos, are a sign for the children. So this is only a miniature model of what will be in history. So in Galus, Esav interacts with us in both ways. So there's times in Galus where they make decrees against us, and they punish us, and they fight us, they try to destroy us. In the initial days of Rome, so there was a lot of prohibitions against keeping Torah, keep mitzvos, they would kill Jews and torture Jews, throw Jews in with the lions in the Colosseum. But Hashem saved us from that initially. We suffered a lot, but we made it through. So eventually Esav said, okay, live with us in peace. Let's be friends. And the kavanah of Esav, you know, his devious, sinister kavanah, is that he should distance us from serving Hashem. And drive us away from Amunah. Like Esav said in the Chumash, let's travel together, and I'll walk with you. And the Medrash says, Esav said, let's join together and be partners in both worlds. Olam Haba and Olam Haza. Agdol Olam Haba, you'll get some Olam Haza, you know, we'll make some compromises, and everyone will be happy. Ubir Dvaram Sh'amar Lo, Nisav Anelcha Ve'lecha, L'gnadecha, Dahainu Sh'shneim, Yiskarvo Zetzel Zeh. We'll be close to each other. And this is the main point. And you know what? We can both be vater a little bit. We'll both give in a little bit. You know, if you're going to be with me, I'm Esav. If you're going to spend time with me, so you keep going Torah all the time, because you know I'm not into that. So you have to put down your safer and come out and play some football with me. And Yaakov says, well, if I'll be with you, Esav, you know, I don't always like playing football, so you got to come to Bais Medrash and learn a little bit. So everyone will give in a little bit. But once you give in a little bit, so you're giving up everything. Because as soon as you are willing to give up on Torah, even one iota, at that point, you know, that it becomes called the snowball effect. You know, eventually everything's going to collapse. Hago kado machis karvo zezos, and then become close. Vakavana shal medrash mavur dushil basof gam him yikabul ikrim tovim meunas Yisrael. So the medrash is saying Esav is willing to give in. He will appreciate some of what we do. He'll accept upon himself some good midos, little amuna. Maybe Esav will even agree to believe in Hashem and in Torah. But he also wants Yaakov to forego a little bit of what he does. And to give up a little bit of what he does to get into Olam Haba. No, don't be so makbid on mitzvos. Drop mitzvah here, a little learning over there. You don't have to daven every single davening all the time. It's just too much. You should get more involved in the world. And involve yourself in things that are more superficial and external. Don't only focus on Torah. So that was the devious plan of Esav. And it's cut out history. Again, the actual Goyim or governments that made these decrees or attempted this, they're not thinking this consciously necessarily. But subconsciously, they're all coming from Esav's power. And Esav's goal is to always tear us away from Rosh Hashem. So if he can't kill us, he'll try to convince us in other ways. It's very interesting. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky in Emes Yaakov says a very similar idea about Lavan. We know in the Haggadah we say, Lavan bikesh la'kor sakol. The power wasn't as bad as Lavan. Because power wanted to kill all the males, and Lavan wanted to kill everybody. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says, where do you find that Lavan wanted to kill everybody? Nowhere in the Chumash do we see Lavan wanting to kill. He says that, these are my grandchildren, I want to kiss them goodbye, I love my family. Where do you find that Lavan's trying to destroy all of Klal Yisrael? So Rav Yaakov says, you know where you find it? When Lavan comes and catches up with Yaakov and says, you know, why didn't you leave me and let me know that you're leaving? I would have thrown you a party, I would have kissed my daughters and my grandchildren. We would have left in peace, in a very, very healthy, loving relationship. So right there, Lavan was trying to destroy Klal Yisrael. Because as soon as Yaakov was willing to make peace with Lavan and become partners with Lavan and to give in to what Lavan stands for, that's already destruction of Klal Yisrael. Very similar idea. As soon as Yaakov was willing to give in to Esav and to make compromises in order to become friends with Esav, at that point you're destroying Klal Yisrael because Yaakov's going to give up of his avoda to serve Hashem in order to be brothers with Esav. And that we can never have. So I'll stop here on this piece. He goes on a lot longer. But that's his concept. So Esav comes at us in two ways. Esav comes at us to kill us at times. But sometimes Esav says, I don't want to kill you, I want to be friends with you. And when he does that, that becomes a very dangerous situation. Because that's when Jews start assimilating and taking on non-Jewish culture. As we've seen, unfortunately, all too often in America. America is a galus, I think, of this type. Esav's coming as a brother. So on the one hand, we're very, very grateful that America is such a friendly galus. We're very happy to be in a very peaceful society that's respectful and tolerant of what we do. But how many Jews have totally left Yiddishkeit because of the welcoming society around? Very few Jews living in the conditions in Eastern Europe 200 years ago wanted to become Polish or Russian because it wasn't very inviting. You know, they weren't very inviting to us. It wasn't very pleasant to be a Polish or Russian at the time. So, whether religious, not religious, they remained Jewish. They identified as Jews. Most of them were religious to some extent. In America, it was very, very easy and welcoming to drop it all and to become full-blown Americans. And unfortunately, many Jews became full-blown Americans and dropped Yiddishkeit because of it. It's a very devious way to destroy Yiddishkeit without having to pick up a sword and kill or make decrees against Torah. It happens in other ways. So that's this idea of the Beis Halevi. And that's Esav. In our current Golus, Esav's anti-Semitism, Esav's devious plans come both ways. They come to bite us with their teeth, or else to bite us with their kiss. You know, their kiss is also a bite as well. And that's the idea. So it could be pogroms, it could be a Holocaust, or it could be American assimilation. These are all effects of Esav's power to come to take down Yaakov. Because ultimately Esav's goal is to destroy Klal Yisrael and to draw us away from Yiddishkeit. The Maral, he talks about the different kingdoms that come against us. The Maral says that, you know, the other kingdoms that come to fight Klal Yisrael, whether it be Bavel, whether it be Persia, whether it be Yavan, they had specific motives in mind. They weren't just opposition to Jews, but they had their own goals they wanted to somehow bring out in the world. When Esav comes to fight us, when Rome or Esav comes to fight us, their goal is just we are total opposition to Klal Yisrael. We're not here to profess our own personal goals or ideals. We're here just to kill and draw Jews away from Yiddishkeit. And that was the goal of Rome. That's the goal of Esav. In the very, very beginning of Esav's life, Rivka has the two twins, you know, struggling inside her womb. And she goes to the Navi and says, I don't understand what's happening here. Why is there so much happening inside the womb? You know, what's going on with these kids? And the Nevuah she gets is, you know, you have two great powers inside of you. And it says, La'om mil'om ya'amat. The one nation's going to be strong because of the other nation. I mean, there's going to be an inverse effect. When Esav, Chazal tells us, Esav is on top, Klal Yisrael is on the bottom. When Klal Yisrael goes up, Esav goes down. The two will never be on the same plane. Either we're up and they're down, or we're down. But we're never going to be together. That's Esav and Yaakov. So Yaakov and Esav, they have this inverse relationship, and therefore, it's one or the other. You know, there's not enough room here for both of us. That's the attitude of Esav towards Yaakov. So Esav just coming to bring us down so that they can rise. Now the other question is, No, throughout this past Golos. So we can say that this is called Golos Edom. It's all Esav's fault because Esav destroyed the second base of Mikdash. Rome destroyed the second base of Mikdash. It's all their fault. But we've been persecuted in every country in the world. I'm saying Arab countries, you know, they have nothing to do with Esav. Now, all sorts of people have persecuted us. You know, are we going to connect the Spanish Inquisition with Esav? Maybe we can. I mean, we said that Christianity is connected. But still, you know, there's so many various ways Jews have been persecuted and, you know, tried and assimilated throughout all these generations of Inengal, this past 2,000 years. How is it all connected with Esav? There's one more piece I wanted to learn, which helps to give us insight into this, by the next page in the packet. It's the Pachad Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, Roshiva of Chaim Berlin. And this is a piece, actually, in his Sefer on Purim. What he has here, the Purim, obviously, is a Yontif, which is relevant to Esav, because Haman's from Amalek, and Amalek descends from Esav. So this is a piece of Pachad Yitzchak. It's, I think I marked it off. It's paragraph Gimel. It's page Lamed Hay on the top, paragraph Gimel. And he's describing here the concept of Esav, and how Esav actually impacts every single country or Golos that we're in. And he says, "Fisidron shel Malchios Meforesh Sefer Daniel." According to the order of the kingdoms that are described in the book of Daniel, Golosenu kiyom kriya hi Golos Romi. Our Golos that we have nowadays is called Golos Romi. It's the Roman Golos. Rome destroyed the second base of Mikdash, so we're in the Golos called by Rome. And we know Chazal describe that our Golos is considered one sheep, there's a sheep again, one sheep amongst 70 wolves. And the 70 wolves meaning that we're amongst all these nations. So many nations are attacking us, not just one, it's not just Rome, but all the nations, past 2,000 years, we've been attacked by dozens of nations. How can we relate our current Golos just to one kingdom? How can we say we're still sitting here in Golos Romi when so many other nations and countries and religions have come to attack us? So typically, we describe it as Golos Romi because it began the Golos. The Golos began because Rome destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, and even though we've been tossed around to Babylonia, and to Spain, and to France, and to Morocco, and to America, and to Russia, and Poland, we still call Golos Romi because Rome started it all. That's usually how we understand it. Because Rome destroyed the Mikdash, and because of Rome, we were exiled. So we say that the 70 wolves that attack us, all the other nations, it was all caused by Rome. But it goes much deeper than this, he's going to explain. So we'll say because Rome started it all. Rome's the cause. But then he says it goes much deeper. That's not the meaning. What's the meaning? Achla mito shel davar. The truth is the following. Ein Hashem Golos Romi Misparish Muvan Haschalos Golos Klal. You can't say that Golos Romi is only explained because it began the Golos. Diyin Ramban Parshas Arba Samlachim Im Avram. Because it's actually explained by the Ramban in Parshas Lech Lecha. In Lech Lecha you have the war of the four kings and the five kings. And Avram Avinu had to get involved to go save his nephew Lot. And over there, when the Torah discusses these kings, the Torah says, "Before Shuba Chazal, the Gamar Ba Malachim Alalu, the four kings, the Drashim Heim Inyan Ha'arba Malchios Asidos the Shabbos Yisrael." The four kings on the side of the is 4:5. So those four kings symbolize the four different kingdoms that come to attack Klal Yisrael. We discussed those kingdoms before Hanukkah. There's four kingdoms: Babylonia, Persia, Greece, and Rome. Those are our four kingdoms. So the four kings you find in Parshas Lech Lecha, those kings represent the four Malchios. And the fourth king, Acharon B'Mlachim Ha'elu, the fourth king listed in Parshas Lech Lecha, his name is Sidal Melech Goyim. He was called Sidal, the king of Goyim, the king of nations. So it's interesting. All the other kings, let's read the names of the kings for a second, just so we can get it clear. All the other kings mentioned there in Parshas Lech Lecha, they have normal single kingdom names. So they're kings over one kingdom. It says that the battle began. There was Kadar Laomer Melech Elam. He was the king of Elam. There was Amraphel, the king of Shinar. There's Aryoch Melech Elasar. He was the king of Elasar. Then there's this person named Sidal Melech Goyim. He was the king of Goyim. So it's a very strange thing. What do you mean he's the king of Goyim? He was the king of everybody else? What does that mean? Upirsha Ramban, Sheravusa Melech Zes. The Ramban explains that the Chiddush that this Melech represents, Hushu Melech al Amim Shonim, he was the king of many nations, Goyim Loshen Rabim Dafka. So when it says Goyim, the Ramban says it means he was actually the king over several nations. But Chazal tell us something deeper than that. Chazal tell us, Melech Goyim, the king of Goyim is the Edom. That refers to Edom. Shekoseves Tirunya L'Umos Ha'olam. Edom, Rome, writes Tirunya. I assume Tirunya comes from a similar root as tyranny. You know, tyranny, Tirunya. And Rome writes letters of tyranny to all the nations. What does that mean? Kolomar, Kol HaMalchios HaKulmos L'Edom, All the other kingdoms before Edom, so their kingdom was only they only ruled over one area of the world. But the idea of Siddal Melch Goyim, the Stam Melchus Oshel Goyim Bechlal, his malchus, his kingship, was perceived in all nations. What does that mean? Because his opposition to Klal Yisrael is not limited to one place. In one border of one kingdom, his opposition to Klal Yisrael is a poison, which is spread to all areas of the world, of all nations. So it says that Siddal is Melch Goyim. He represents Rome. He's called Melch Goyim because Rome spreads its poison, its hate, its despise for Klal Yisrael to all nations. And that's what it says, Kosev Tirunya, he writes tyranny, letters of tyranny, meaning that he writes out letters to all nations, whether it be physically or conceptually, that all nations should rise up to destroy Klal Yisrael. Chol Umos Hachnis Bekirbam Sama Demose, he tries to bring into the midst of all nations this fatal poison, Shel Nigud Yisrael, of opposition to Klal Yisrael. Metzias HaSasa Shel Melech HaZeh Gadolhi Ad Kedei Kach. So, and this king is so successful in persuading other nations to stand up against Klal Yisrael, Sheshem Toar Shalom V'Cheshmen Malchios, when he's listed as a king, he's called Melech Goyim, because influence is able to influence the entire world. Kolomar Malchus Hasina Shalom, the Malchus of hate that he represents, Mispashetas Me'ever L'Gvus Amim, it goes beyond borders. You know, they have doctors without limits. This is hatred without limits. This goes everywhere. So our Galus is called Galus Romi, not because Rome started it. You can explain it in this way. Throughout the duration of this Galus, Edom sends out hatred to all the nations. Esav's power, Esav's opposition to Klal Yisrael, has been spread throughout the world. And it all begins from Rome and spreads from there. So that's why it's called Galus Romi, the Galus Edom, Mashmos Mechschaf Mechschenu. Because we look at these both as the same idea, because Rome is the one who sends out the hatred of Klal Yisrael. So the notion that Jews are a problem, and Jews should be persecuted, Jews should be put into ghettos, Jews should be cut down, Jews should be destroyed, it's not just that each nation came out on their own. It's all the influence of Rome and of Edom. That's where it comes from Esav. It all comes from Esav. So Rome began the Galus, but Rome is responsible for spreading that throughout the world to every single nation which persecutes us this very day. And that's what the Pach Yitzchak describes. He's speaking about it when it comes to Purim, because we know in the Purim story, Haman descends from Esav. And who's the one that convinced Achashverosh to kill Jews? It was Haman. Haman was sending out the letters of tyranny to Achashverosh in that story. But it's the same idea. It's not just Haman and Achashverosh. Every single persecution that we've endured throughout the past 2,000 years, we're going to blame on Rome and Galus Romi, and Rome's, you know, poison, which they are able to spread throughout the world. Whether it be they actually have spread rumors or lies about Klal Yisrael, whether it be a spiritual force that they've been able to insert into all the nations. But it's all impact. It's all the impact of Rome and of Esav. So this is the idea of Galus Romi. So we know Esav associates with Rome. Rome, we know, overtook Malchus Yavan, as we discussed before Hanukkah. We know that the Christian world developed from Rome. So essentially, the entire Western world we're living in is all going to be an offshoot of Galus Romi and of Esav. And certainly, I think, from our modern perspective, I would assume that most of the anti-Semitism and struggles we've had have come from the Christian world, you know, mostly. And we've had plenty from the Arab world as well. But I think, you know, overall, and whether it's from the Christian world themselves, or it's based on this idea of Siddur Melech Goyim, it's been somehow injected to the entire world based on Rome. Everything dates back to Rome. So that's the idea of Esav in Rome. Now let's take it back a minute for the Chodesh Teves. It's a fascinating thing. The Chodesh Teves marks, number one, the beginning of Christianity. Typically, December 25th is going to be in Teves, and almost all years. We discussed last week one of the theories of the ninth of Teves. The ninth of Teves was actually the original birth of Yashko was ninth of Teves. So Christianity actually begins in Teves. That's where it begins. That was one of the suggestions for the ninth of Teves was the birth of Yashko was ninth of Teves. The solar new year, again, I believe is almost always, if not always, in Teves. And we know that the Christian world, the non-Jewish world, counts from the solar new year. Esav counts by the sun. That's what Esav counts. And it's not just that we see it. You know, Chazal talk about this as well. The Gemara says in Masech HaSukkah that the Umos Olam count by the sun, and Klai Yisrael counts by the moon. That's why we have a lunar calendar, and the Goyim have a solar calendar. The Marshal explains a very interesting thing. The Marshal on that Gemara, when it talks about how the nations of the world count with the sun. So the Marshal explains that Esav is Beno HaGadol. Esav is the older, and Yaakov is the younger. So the sun is like Esav, and the moon is like Yaakov. You know, the moon is smaller, and the sun is bigger. He says, furthermore, you know, the moon, you can actually perceive the moon both at nighttime and in the daytime sometimes. The sun, I mean, obviously it's by definition, but the sun you only see during the daytime. What does that mean? Because Esav only has his heyday in Olam Hazeh, but Olam Haba, he's gone. But Yaakov has his time both in Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, so you can see the moon both by day and by night. Esav only has daytime, but when it comes to the nighttime, he's gone. That's what the Marsha says. But the solar year is associated with Esav, and the lunar year is with Yaakov. I find it very interesting. The Gemara actually says that the Satan is able to prosecute us every day of the year besides one. Besides Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, the Satan doesn't prosecute. Yom Kippur, you know, it's all a day of rachman from Hashem and forgiveness. The prosecutor doesn't prosecute us in Yom Kippur. How does the Gemara know this? The Gemara says that the word HaSatan, the gematria is 364. So the year is 365 days. There's one day the Satan doesn't get to have do his thing. That's one day is Yom Kippur. That's what Gemara says. Now you're the Gemara, you should ask the question. You know, we Jews don't have a 365 day year. We count on the lunar year as 354 days. And if it's a leap year, it's 384 days. But 365 is a Goyish number. It's from the solar year, not from the lunar year. Why is it that the Gemara is using the solar year suddenly? But the answer, I think, is very simple. The Satan and the forces of evil, they work on the solar calendar. Like Esav and the Goyim count the solar calendar. So the Satan's work schedule is the solar calendar, not the lunar calendar. So one day a year, the Satan has off. On his solar calendar, that's Yom Kippur. That's the day he has off. You also find that the Ketores, for anyone who says the parsha of Ketores in davening, the Ketores, it says that they would prepare 368 portions of Ketores. It says that they would have 365, one per day of the year, and three more for special ones for Yom Kippur. But Ketores, it also was processed on a solar calendar, 365. And again, you have to wonder, why is the Ketores working with the solar calendar? But the answer, I think, is also, you find that Chazal teach us, you see in the Torah itself, that Ketores is something used to fight the forces of evil. When there is a plague spreading in Parshas Korach, Aaron takes the Ketores, he's able to cause the plague to go away. Or Moshe does, I think. Moshe takes the Ketores. But Ketores is supposed to drive away evil and drive away plagues. So Ketores is something which associates with that world of evil, of plagues, and therefore Ketores also works on the solar calendar. But the solar calendar is a calendar which is used by Esav, and the solar year begins in Teves. Teves is the month of on the Jewish calendar, the solar year always is going to begin. It's always in Teves. There's the last piece in the packet, which hopefully we'll have time to do. We can see some parts of it. It talks about the idea, and I think we discussed this a few months ago when we started the class, how Jews use the lunar calendar and going to the solar calendar. But he goes through the idea of what's the concept of the sun versus the moon, of the solar versus the lunar calendar. This piece is from the Sefer Afikei Mayim. This is actually written by Ramush Shapiro. It was a snifter a few days ago. Ramush Shapiro was a great God on Earth Israel. He was actually Rabbi Lopiansky's Rebbe. He was somebody, he actually has hundreds of Talmidim. He was somebody who was just an incredible teacher. The way he was able to explain Torah was like crystal clear. I used to go hear him when I was near Tisrael also. I used to go to him once a week and hear his shir. This amazing gadol, somebody who had a clarity. And he walked around in a very, very, you saw him, you saw somebody who was a gadol, a very regal person. So he was just nifter, I think, on Motzi Shabbos. So I actually planned to do this piece last week before I heard he was nifter, but it actually works out nicely that we're learning his Torah during the week of his Shiva. This actually, I guess, should be a chus for his neshama. But Rav Moshe Shapiro, he gave shiurim on all areas of machshava. He was somebody who gave shiurim to groups of talmidim constantly, day and night. Really had probably thousands of talmidim. Many of the great minds, which many of us are familiar with in the Jewish world, were students of his. People ranging from Rabbi Lapiansky, Rabbi Gershenfeld's Rosh Shiva in Machon Shlomo, Rav Yeshua Hartman, who put out all the Sfarim of the Maharal, Gor Aryeh, Rav Mordechai Becher, who's a Rebbe in YU and a person involved in Kiruv, Rabbi Orlovsky, who's heard him. They're all students of Rabbi Moshe Shapiro. I mean, he had hundreds of students, many famous students. But so the piece over here, he's discussing the concept of the moon and the sun and why. What? It's on page Sadi Zion, yeah, Sadi Zion. So I think I marked off. I mark off where to start. Yeah, okay, good. So I think we'll skip around a little bit due to lack of time. We'll try to see what he says. So he begins this first paragraph. He talks about the idea of Kiddush HaChodesh was the first mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael as a whole. Obviously, the moon for us is a very important thing. Klal Yisrael is compared to the moon. And we do Kiddush Levana every single month. And we talk about how Hashem tells the moon to renew itself, similar to Klal Yisrael, should also renew itself, Lasi Lovo, as well. So he wants to understand what's the relationship of Klal Yisrael to the moon and the Goyim to the sun. So I'm going to go to the next paragraph, Vihine, second paragraph from the page. Hine Pnimis Inyan Hu. So the idea of the Inyan is the following. Shebetchila Sabriya Nivru Shneim Oros HaGadolim. When Hashem first created the world, it says in Bereshit he created two great luminaries, the moon and the sun, and they're both initially large. Becharkach Nismata Halavana Al Shekitriga. But eventually the moon was shrunk down to size. And the concept is that Hashem's desire is that His Malchus should be revealed in the world. So how is Hashem's Malchus revealed in our world? It's that human beings have to select Hashem as their king. People have to recognize Hashem. The kevach ein melvloam, because we know there's a concept, you can't have a king without a nation. So people have to accept Hashem's kingship by free will. This is our avoda, l'spato klape mail. We have to nullify ourselves towards Hashem and to become avdei Hashem. But if that's the case, Hashem can't shine His light into our world similar to how He does in the heavens, because then we lose all free choice, we lose our challenge. And we can't choose Hashem through Bechira if Hashem is so vivid and so clear to us. So this world is created with a gap where we don't see Hashem's glory. And see Hashem's light. Because Hashem wants that Hashem's light shall be revealed through the human being. So when Hashem's light is revealed in our world, the idea is that it's Hashem's light from the heavens coming out into our world through our avoda. Hashem's light is going to influence our world. So we have an image that Hashem's light is so great, overwhelming. If we were to see Hashem's light, we would have no free choice anymore. It'd be so clear we have to do what's right, we become robots. So Hashem has to hold back some of His light so that we have free choice to recognize Him as our God. However, His goal eventually is that we should bring out His light. He's not going to shine His light into our world. We as human beings have to be able to perceive Hashem, commit ourselves to Hashem, and then bring out that light in our lives. This is the idea of the moon receiving its light from the sun. The moon has no light of its own. The moon is just a big piece of rock. But the moon's able to reflect the light of the sun in a very powerful way. The moon has the ability that can receive the influx of light from above. That's why Jews are compared to the moon. Because our avoda is to receive the light, even in the darkness. V'lachein, I'm skipping the brackets, V'lachein, monin Yisrael v'shnas havan. That's why we Jews count by the lunar calendar. Because our job is to be like the moon, to reveal Hashem's light in the lower world. And this is what it means. We're saying Kiddush Levana. The Klai Yisrael in the future will renew themselves like the moon. Because every single month when the moon renews itself and starts to wax, that is, on a deeper level, a renewal of Hashem's Machus in the world. Because Hashem's light becomes received in the lower world. Next paragraph. Ach umas olam monim mishnas hachama. The goyim count by the sun. Mishum shechama hi keneged mahaloch hativi shekavu ba'olam. The sun is something which corresponds to the natural process. Shemeir Hashemesh b'temidus. The sun shines constantly. Bilti mahaloch shochesh. It never renews itself. The moon has a phase of waxing and waning. The moon disappears and it comes back. So the moon represents to us renewal, something which is new, chiddush. That's the idea of Klai Yisrael trying to receive light and reflect it back to the world. The sun is a constant. It shines bright day in and day out. It rises, it sets. But the idea of chiddush, the idea of the moon, is that we can have times where there's darkness and we can do the right thing, do a mitzvah, make a good decision, and reveal the light. Or else, without that, the moon doesn't exist. That's the moon. The moon is able to take darkness and then reflect off light. But the chama, the sun, it shines in a consistent way. There's never a void. There's never a gap. There's no darkness. Like we say, b'chol yom tamid maaseh b'reishis. And davening, we talk about every single day, tamid, constantly, Hashem is renewing maaseh b'reishis. So the chama, the sun, represents the lower world. And he says that's why a solar year, is called a shana. Kashana just means repetition. It's the renewal. The idea of shana is like sheni, like a second time, like repeat. Something which is a shana is just repetition. It keeps on repeating. Because when it comes to the sun, to the solar year, there's no chiddush in the solar year. It just keeps on going around and around and around. So we see that the sun connects to the mahalach of nature, the process of nature, and the moon connects to something which is happening above nature. That's that symbolism. Just skip to the page Sadi test in the bottom, one more piece over here. And to keep in mind, there's no such thing in terms of astronomical phenomena. No such thing as a lunar year. There's lunar months and there's solar years. A year is defined by the sun going around, Earth going around the sun, and a month is defined by the moon renewing itself. But there's no such thing as a year technically on the lunar cycle. No such thing as a month technically on the solar cycle. So in the solar cycle, the months are just kind of, they're made up. You know, the 30-day months are made up. There's no phenomena happening with the stars or the sun or the moon to make a month in terms of the solar year. And in terms of the lunar year, years don't really exist. It's all months. So Klai Yisrael works on the moon. We work on months. And that's the idea of a month is a chodesh, a chiddush. Month is renewal. And a shana is repetition. It's something which is old. And that's the sun. And that's a year. And that's where it comes from. So in the very bottom of Beit Sadi test, we learn from here, the Shnasa Chama, Shnasa Alvana, Him Shnim Halchim Nifradim. That the solar year, the lunar year, are two separate approaches. Sharei Mahalach Sivu Shnasa Chama, Hushin Samech Yamim Bilvad. The solar year is 365 days. Va'omnam Ina Mischalkim Yimis Chadashim. It does not divide the 12 months. Kifurz Rigo, the Gra explains. Kegat Ze Shnasa Alvana, the lunar year, Eba Tarashana. There's no year really. El Chadashim Bilvad. It's just months. We happen to say, okay, 12 months makes a year, but the moon itself doesn't have any year. And that's what's explained, that the whole concept of the sun, that's totally connected to the rules of nature, to the lower world, to repetition, nothing to do with receiving light from any other source, But the moon cycle has to do with the Chodesh, the idea of Chodesh, the idea of renewal. And Mishodesh is Pama Chapam, and that renews itself constantly. So, to bring this back to our topic, we understand that the idea of a solar year, in our minds, is a very cut and dry, physical, natural phenomena, which doesn't represent anything about Hashem being mashpi upon the world. It's just, this is how the world works. In kol chodesh tachas hashemesh, we say in Kohelis. There's nothing new under the sun. The sun is same old, same old. Shana is the idea of shoneh, it's just repetition, it's stale, that's the idea of the sun. The moon is something that renews itself monthly. The moon, we talk about, it's the idea of chodesh, the month, the idea of chidesh, is renewal. The moon reflects sunlight, which represents Klai Yisrael's tachas in the world, is to reflect Hashem's light. That's the idea of the moon. So Teves, which is the month of the solar new year, again, I believe it's always in Teves, if not 9 out of 10 times in Teves. Teves is the month of the solar new year. This month is the month of Esav, it's the month of the Goyim, it's the month of Chorban, it's the month where Chorban begins. And it's the idea that the Koach of Esav enters in the world in this month is very fitting, because this month is the month of the solar new year. This month is the month where the sun is at its great, its, in terms of the concept, at its greatest power. So the most destructive force to Klai Yisrael historically, arguably, has been Esav. Esav has sent his hatred to all the Umas Olam. We're in the longest galus we've ever had. It's been over, almost 2,000 years now, since the year 70. It's close to 2,000 years now. The suffering has been the worst during this galus. And either it comes from Esav directly, or it comes from Esav sending out his hatred and his venom to all of the Umas Olam. It all begins in Teves. Teves, again, the Mazel Teves is the Gedi, is the goat, which the goat's Esav. And this is the month of Esav. Now, I want to add in with one more positive point. I mean, from our end, to understand what Teves is about, we have to understand this month is a month of tragedy. But there's a positive point in Teves as well. And sometimes it's hard to see the positive when you talk about so much negative. But I'm going to share with you an amazing Rambam, and I'll base it on another point first. Now, another place you find Chodesh Teves is in Megillas Esther. In Megillas Esther, it says that Esther was taken to the palace of Achashverosh in the month of Teves. That's what it says. Bechodesh Revi Chodesh Teves. That's what it says in the Chodesh Asiri, Chodesh Teves. The 10th month is Chodesh Teves. So, what's the idea of Esther being taken to the palace during Teves? I mean, that's an interesting fact. Why is that relevant? So, we've mentioned many times how Teves, Kislev and Teves, the darkest months of the year. But Teves now is where the light starts to be getting a little bit longer. I mean, nights are starting to get a little shorter, days getting a little bit longer. We're still in time of year where the nights are the longest, days are the shortest. But we're past the solstice, and now the light's beginning to shine a little bit more. So Mefarshim explain that Megillas Esther, so when Esther's taken to the palace, that's the beginning of a miracle. It's tragic because this poor girl is taken into the palace. No one knows why. No one knows what she's doing there. No one can, at that point, can foresee a nace is about to occur. But that was the beginning of an incredible miracle. The nights of Teves, so the nights, the light's starting to get a little bit longer. Nights are getting a little bit shorter. It's a little glimpse of Geula, a little glimpse of Yeshua. So the Yeshua starts in a miniature way in Megillas Esther in Chodesh Teves, which means that what Teves represents to us is a miniature, there's a miniature Yeshua which is supposed to come to Chodesh Teves. Now, we've talked about so much tragedy and Esav and anti-Semitism. Like, where do you find the little bit of Yeshua in Chodesh Teves? So, where I think you find it is a fascinating piece from the Rambam, which is not in the packets, but I'll read it to you. This is a piece, which you'll see why in a minute, was censored from the Rambam for many, many centuries. And it's being printed just recently back into the Rambams again. So it was a censored piece. We actually kept the censored piece, but it wasn't in the regular printing of the Rambam. But the newer Rambam prints have now put it back in again. And the Rambam talks about, this is in Hilchos Malachim, he's discussing the idea of Mashiach. The Rambam, the very last two prakim of Mishneh Torah, discuss Mashiach. He discusses what Mashiach is, what it means when Mashiach comes. The Rambam has a long discussion about Mashiach. So in this discussion, I'll read you the whole piece, but the main part is the second half, but the whole piece is interesting. The Rambam says, if a king rises from David's household, a descendant of David, he's knowledgeable in Torah, he does mitzvos, like David, his ancestor, he keeps Torah shebichsav and Torah shebalpeh, He says that he's able to persuade Klal Yisrael to follow the ways of the Torah, and he's able to strengthen Klal Yisrael and to fight the wars of Hashem. So you can make a valid assumption the person is Mashiach. If he does this and he succeeds and he destroys the enemies around, he builds the Beis Hamikdash and gathers in all of the Jews from all over the world, at that point you can assume he's for sure Mashiach. Right? So there's just two stages. He's starting to do a good job. You can say, okay, he's probably Mashiach. When you see him actually build the Beis Hamikdash, you gather in the Goliath, you say, okay, this guy's for sure Mashiach now. But if he's not successful, or he is killed, you know he's not Mashiach. So other nations haven't figured that one out yet. But the Rambam says very clearly, if he has been killed, he is no longer Mashiach. This is not the one Torah is talking about. And he's a good king, like any other king from Melech of Beis David. I mean, it doesn't mean he's a bad person. He could be a good king, a great leader, a very inspirational person, but he's not Mashiach. And Hashem gave him power to test the masses. So now here comes the part I was getting. This next part is the censored part. Right? You'll see why it's censored in a second. So the Rambam is going to discuss, well, these people have risen up and fallen over the generations who've started other religions. And these religions have been very, very terrible towards Klal Yisrael. And what's the Hashgacha in that? So he says, Af Yeshua HaNotzri, even Yashka from Nazareth, Shadima Shia Mashiach, which they thought was Mashiach, Venera Bebezdin, and was killed by a Bezdin, he says, Kvarnasnabebo Daniel. Daniel, in Sefer Daniel, already prophesied about Yeshua HaNotzri, Shnemar Vene Pritze Amcha Yinasu Lahamid Chazom Nechshalu. It says the lawless ones of your nation are going to try to uphold the vision, and they will stumble. Is there any greater obstacle than this? Shkol Neviim Dibru B'Shem Mashiach Gol Yisrael. All the Neviim said the Mashiach is the Redeemer of Klal Yisrael. U'Moshiyam, and he's going to save us. Mekabez Nidcheyam, and gather us in from Galus. Mechaz Mitzvah is going to strengthen our mitzvos. V'Zeh Gorim, and this guy, who they felt was Mashiach, caused to destroy Klal Yisrael by the sword, and to scatter us throughout the world, and to lower us down, and switched our Torah for something else, Ilhatos Rova Olam, and caused most of the world to make tremendous mistakes, and to serve a God other than Hashem. So that's the Rambam's opinion on Yashka. Aval Machshavos Bore Olam, Enko Pa'adam Hasikam, but we can understand Hashem's ways. Kilot Archeinu Drachav, our ways are not Hashem's ways, Machshavinu Machshavosav, and our thoughts are Hashem's thoughts. V'chol Hadvar Ma'elu Shal Yeshua HaNotzri, Shal Zeish Ma'elu, he says all of these matters of Yeshua HaNotzri, of Yashka, and of the Ishmaelite, the Ishmaeli, Muhammad, Amar Akhrav, that came later on. And here comes the positive note. This is what I was trying to get to. Einan El Yasher Derech LeMelech HaMashiach. Both of these people, who've caused tremendous pain to Klal Yisrael, the Ashkacha was they should come into the world to pave the path for Mashiach. L'sakin es ha'olam kulo, and to perfect the world, lavos Hashem biyacha, to serve Hashem together. Kate Zad, how is this? Kvar nesmale ha'olam kulo medivrei Mashiach. The whole world now is filled with talk of Mashiach. Mashiach is a household term now. The idea of a Messiah was not a popular term amongst pagans. You know, they didn't believe in such a thing. But with the advent of Christianity and Islam, the idea of a Messiah is a household word. Everyone understands there's something called Mashiach. He's supposed to come again, or come. Medivrei HaTorah, Medivrei HaMitzvos, and people are aware of Torah Mitzvos. Christians recognize the Old Testament. They don't follow it, but they recognize it. Muslims also admit to the fact that there was Maimon Har Sinai. They don't follow it either, but they recognize it. And the whole world, even those who don't follow Torah and believe in other forces or other Mashiachs, but they're familiar with the concept. They are familiar with Klal Yisrael, familiar with Mitzvos, familiar with Mashiach. These matters have been spread to far off lands, va'amim rabim, and to many, many nations. They talk about these matters. I mean, Christianity and Islam both spread to very far flung places. Mitzvos haTorah elu omra mitzvos elu emes, and they talk about Torah, and they say some mitzvos are good, and they say that some mitzvos are batal. They don't no longer are relevant. And they don't apply anymore. That's what many of them say. But they talk about them. They know they're there. They discuss them. And some say that we don't follow these things, but there's some hidden matters here. And they're just metaphors, and they're not, you know, you don't read them in their simple form. And they say Mashiach's already come, and he's already expressed the hidden secrets of the Torah. So that's what all these goyim say. So we don't believe in anything which we said right here, but the goyim say these things, which means that they're familiar with it. So Rambam says, when Mashiach really comes, and he succeeds, he's able to exalt himself over the world, so they're going to immediately be able to do tshuva and understand that they've been living lives of sheker, and they'll know that their prophets and their parents have fooled them. But they'll know what's happening. They'll be totally aware. I mean, if the whole world was pagan and had no sense at all of the Torah or of Mashiach or of mitzvos, and Mashiach comes, there's a long way to travel between being a Roman pagan to recognizing a Mashiach. But from being a Christian to start recognizing the Mashiach is not a long road to travel. They're aware of Mashiach, they're aware of the Torah, they're aware of mitzvot, they just don't believe in it right now as being relevant, but they're aware of it. So Mashiach comes and says, you guys are wrong, here I am. They're going to say, oh, okay, they'll toss away the New Testament, take out the Old Testament, and they'll be all set. You know, they have it all there. So the Rambam says that, you know, Hashem's ways are hidden from us, we don't understand Hashem's ways, but there is a glimmer of salvation in the advent of Christianity and Islam. It's a fascinating piece in the Rambam, very fascinating piece. But I'd like to make that connection. So Chodesh Tevis, we're looking at this as the month where Esav's power is at its worst, where Christianity has begun and it's spread, where the solar new year takes its effect. But within Tevis, Esther's taken to the palace. There's a glimmer of salvation, Esther going to the palace. And in terms of the advent of Christianity, as difficult as it's been for so many generations of Jews who've suffered at the hands of the church, the Rambam sees something positive in it. And the positive the Rambam sees is that it's a fascinating thing that they've taken Torah and they don't believe in what we believe in, but they've made it a household term for billions of people in the world. You know, there's only about 18 million Jews or so now, and how many billions of Christians are out there, I don't know. But those billions of Christians are aware of the Torah now because of Christianity. So we look at that as, you know, they're corrupting it, they don't understand it, it's true, but yet they're familiar now. And when Mashiach comes very, very soon, Ritz Hashem, they're all going to be able just to, at the snap of fingers, just turn around and say, okay, we got it, you know, we're here, we're ready for it now. And that's what the Rambam says. So that's our glimmer of hope in Chodesh Tevis, is that, you know, we should see that everything which has developed out of Tevis is all just a step to bringing the world together to Mashiach.